The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Paul Orlowski once again with God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. And Father Walt Jenny is joining us today, a longtime pastor at St. Basil, as well as longtime involvement with Catholic Charities that I know a little bit of something about and admire like as much as any human could admire an organization because it's great work.
It is.
But topic here, of course, is vocations. How were you first drawn to the priesthood?
You know, I'm thinking about that since we spoke previously, and I'm not sure. I wish I could tell you an angel came down and touched me on the shoulder and said, this is what you should do. I don't know. I think there were a number of factors in it. My father passed away when I was I'm still not sure. I think I was 12. Just very suddenly he died. You know, that kind of changed the whole family around. So My mother had never driven. She'd never worked. She was a homemaker. And so she did all those things. And we moved out of this really nice house on a river to an apartment. And I went through Catholic grade school at St. Mary's in Elyria. And then when I graduated from grade school, I moved on to Elyria Catholic, and it was sometime during my senior year, and I'm sure that loss of my father and a lot of things played into this. I just began thinking about the seminary, and I also applied to a couple of other colleges. Never told my mother what I was doing, because she said, "Are you sure you really want to do this?" I said, "No, I'm not sure at all, but I think I'll give it a try." So I went in Borromeo in 1961. In those days, as you may or may not recall, everything, the Mass was in Latin, and I wasn't familiar with Latin at all. So the first year I was in the seminary was called Latin 30, and it was 1 year of Latin. That's all you had, 16 hours a semester,
wow.
Two semesters. We did more Latin in 2 weeks than I did in high school in probably 2 years. So we just wrote, and I remember the end of the first semester, I got a C. And they, in those days, and they may still do, I don't know, they sent your grades to the pastor.
At your home parish?
At your home parish.
Oh, boy.
So he called my mother. He didn't call me. I probably wouldn't. He said, "Mary, Walt will never get through the seminary." And I told her, "You call him back and you tell him if I want to get through here, if this is meant to be, it will be." And so it was meant to be. So 5 years then, 1 year of Latin, 4 years of college at Borromeo, and then 4 years at St. Mary's. At some point, probably in the, I mean, you got 9 years with that extra year thrown in.
A lot of time.
So you got a lot of time to think about it and pray about it and talk to your spiritual director. And I was very fortunate when I was there, this would be at St. Mary's, maybe even at Borromeo a little, once I turned 21. I was really fortunate to have all kinds of summer jobs. And one summer, the guy I worked for just didn't have any work. So one of our coaches in high school was the chief probation officer at the Lorain County Juvenile Court. And just he called me, and I don't think he knew I wasn't working. He said, "You want a job out at the detention home filling in when workers are off?" And I said, "Sure." So I worked out there. And then in summers, he offered me a job as kind of like a summer probation officer. So I met with a whole schedule of kids that were in some kind of trouble or other. And I mention that because one of the guys I was working with, he was a probation officer. He was at Oberlin College studying theology, working towards, and I don't know what denomination Oberlin was or is for that matter. But we got to talking about it one day, and he said, you know, I think I'm just going to give up the seminary, and I'm just going to go into probation work and then into parole work with either younger kids or older adults. He said, I'm not sure which. So anyhow, he didn't suggest anything to me, but that got me thinking about, because I enjoyed doing the probation work and working with the kids, but the more I thought about it and prayed about it, I felt that you could probably do a lot more good for kids and adults as a priest, because you're reaching people at a whole different level than mm-hmm. when they're coming to see you once a week and you're trying to figure out what they're doing and you know they're not telling you anything at all. You know, I took a kid one summer, every day in the summer, I took him to Elyria High School because he failed the grade to go to summer school. So at the end of the summer, I went up to the school to get his grades, and they said, you know, he never showed up. So I dropped him off at the front door. He went in, walked out the back door, and never got in. So never went to school. So that kind of, as strange as that might seem, that kind of said to me, you know, I think I can do more good personally helping, because that was always my goal, just to do something to be of service to people, or call it ministry in our parlance, you know. So I just kind of made the decision there about second or third year in the major seminary, St. Mary's, that I think this is what the Lord was calling me to do. So, and of course, you know, you're talking with spiritual directors, you're talking with the faculty, you're talking with lots of people. So that's my story. That's how I got there.
Yeah. Enriching to be with other guys who are studying and have the same goal.
Yeah. Same goal. Yeah. And, you know, the sad thing in the seminary is that it was much like confidentiality today in terms of visiting people in hospitals. I mean, literally, students' friends would be with us for lunch, and they'd be gone after lunch. And I don't know if they decided to leave or they were asked to leave. I had never had any idea, but it was kind of mind-blowing to see that happen. So you made some really good friends, but you also lost some really good friends over the years. I don't know what we started with, but when we finished in my class, and Father Kosem, we talked about earlier, was in my class, so there were 11 of us, I think, that were ordained. But that's out of probably 150, maybe, back
no
in
kidding.
The day.
Wow.
Yeah, over the 9 years.
That Latin would have been a hurdle for me.
it was terrible.
I was an altar server when it was in Latin, but also during the time when it changed to English. Was it high school? No, I guess it was in ninth grade. I took a year of Latin, and that was just barely a C. I said, okay, I'm switching to Spanish.
Well, I think I got through with Cs and maybe a few Bs, but yeah, it was challenging. It really, and it was going so fast. And there were probably 30 guys in that Latin class. Some of them had gone through college and were coming to the seminary. So a lot of people in different places, plus there were a lot of us just coming out of high school. But, you know, that dwindled down to probably 10 when there was an ordination, you know,
yeah.
Whatever age level they were.
A lot of guys my age can still spit back some of the Latin. We didn't know what we were saying at the
no.
time. I mean, the Pater Noster is pretty easy,
yeah.
You know, and you can derive a lot of words from that. And,
yeah.
But the rest of it, boy, I tell you, we were just all rote. And you better know it, because if the nuns were right there to make sure that you knew it.
Or the priest sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, that's true, too.
Yeah, he stopped me a couple times with the confiteor and said, do that again. I said to him once, if I could have done it the first time, I would have, but I
I'm not trying to disrespect you here.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was just telling him.
We're going to take a break right here, Father Jenny. Stay with us, and I hope you'll, as you're listening, will stay with us as well. More on some of the other works of Father Walt Jenny, as well as his call to serve other people and how he accomplished that over a long career as a Catholic priest. Stay with us. This is AM 1260 The Rock. This is God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. Father Walt Jenny is joining us. And Father, you talked in the first segment about wanting, always really having a call to serve people. Not exactly sure how that was, but eventually, obviously, clearly it came to you. One way you served folks is at Catholic Charities. You had about 20 years there, as I believe.
And I was, yeah.
I think we met through your work with Catholic Charities, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we did,
quite
too,
some time
Paul, yeah.
ago. Tell me about Catholic Charities. And as you know, 10 or 11 years ago, my wife and I were the co-chairs of the Catholic Charities Annual Appeal. During that next year, I saw people working for very modest wages, doing God's work, taking people that the county cast aside, and so many programs. And we got to go to the Rosemary Center. It was one of the bigger blessings of my religious experience of my life. I can't say enough good about it. And you were there for a good long time before I was involved. But tell me about the work of Catholic Charities and what you got out of it, as well as what you gave.
Yeah, let me tell you just where it kind of all started. One of the priests that I was friends with, Father Ed Camille, was the director of Catholic Charities, and I went to see him one day about a totally unrelated conversation. And the next day I got a call from the diocese, and I don't remember who, saying we would like you to begin working at Catholic Charities, and if you do that, then you're going to have to go to graduate school for social work. And I said, no, that's not what I was interested in. I would just like to stay in a parish. He said, no, I think you'd be good at this. So I did talk them into giving me like a year and a half. I was at Our Lady of Guadalupe in Macedonia. They gave me a year and a half there, and I was down at Catholic Charities 2 days a week just to see, you know, what I would think of it and what they would think of me. And when I suggested that to them, I think they actually thought it was a good idea. So based on that, then, I did 2 years at Catholic University in Washington and received then a master's in social work. I was fortunate to live in a parish during that time and just to be able to help out there. But they wanted me to go back to a dormitory for priests. I told them it's not going to happen. I'm not doing that. I just spent 9 years in the seminary. I'm not doing that. So they found me a parish, and it was good for me. So actually, I got out of school then in 77, and I was there till 1994. Began part-time in 74. So at first, it was just like for you doing the appeal. It was just a lot of learning. And interestingly enough, in those days, there really were no, like we have now, hunger centers and meal programs. They didn't exist. I mean, there was, because there was not a great need for it. But mm-hmm. then during my time there, the need grew just exponentially for people, you know, for the economy, for jobs, for lots of different things. So then we began opening hunger centers for people in parishes and also providing hot meals, like at St. Augustine, where Father Joe McNulty was, mm-hmm. And at lots of other places as well. So that was one evolutionary kind of fact that was occurring. For me, my sole purpose was to be of service to people, and I really felt, you know, we were doing something. So even though I was distant from it, I was mostly an administrator. I didn't really have anything to do with the Catholic Charities appeal beyond promoting it and speaking at various events. My responsibility was kind of managing the operation, mm-hmm. you know, all the agencies mm-hmm. and services, which were just so it was lots and lots of meetings that I attended. And I learned firsthand from all the counties of the diocese, just exactly the great work that Catholic Charities was doing. And of course, we would get the staff together of all the agencies, particularly the directors, and talk with them. But it was just so my comfort was in knowing that even though I couldn't do it myself directly, we could empower other people to be of service, you know, and to help those who are in the greatest need. So I took comfort in that.
Well, back to that call many, many years earlier to help people.
To serve, yeah.
Serve people. It's, you say quite a bit about the example of your mom and how she helped you through things. One of the ones was, once you give your word, keep it.
Yeah. Well, that was more my dad. My dad had two basic rules. One was you don't lie. Okay, so I don't lie. I mean, unless I'm really trapped in a situation where someone doesn't need to know what I know, I'm not saying it, but I'm not going to lie. I'm going to kind of squirrel my way around it. But you don't lie. And the other one was, if you give your word, you got to be faithful to your word. And that's kind of been my mantra for all these years. Just you got to do what you said you do, you know?
Yeah.
You don't walk away from it.
Do you think that the catechesis of young people today is better than maybe in the 50s and 60s? A lot of what I heard was because I said so. Sometimes do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah.
As opposed to there seems to be maybe a better catechesis, and hopefully at some point that leads to more vocations.
Yeah, I sincerely hope so. I think there is a much more interactive kind of catechesis when we learned. You know, I was in grade school. There were, and many of the listeners will identify with this, there were in St. Mary's in Lurie, there were three classes of each grade of 60 kids in a grade. I didn't have the common sense to feel sorry for the sisters who were teaching, but it had to be brutal on them.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
But that being said, you know, there had to be all the typical child illnesses, you know, ADHD and ADD, but it never manifested itself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They had total control of the classroom. And even through high school, we had Notre Dame's there too. It was pretty much they controlled the environment pretty well. And every now and again, the guys would get a little out of line, but not too much. You didn't want to push your luck because they would go right to your parents. So,
yep.
But I think the catechesis today is more involving of the kids and giving them a greater understanding of what it's all about. I mean, the practical side of, you know, love your neighbor. What does that mean, you know?
The good sisters used to control who could be an altar boy. Why doesn't he do it? Well, sister wouldn't let him because he's trying to correct some sort of behavior.
Or she knew it, there'd be trouble if he did.
Yeah. Although all these years later, all of the stuff that I ever denied to one of the sisters was true. Just, they had me. Oh, no, sister. I wouldn't think about that, sister. No, sister. Well, no, she had me.
And when they got you.
They got you. So there's my confession 50 years later.
That's all right. It's time it came out, Paul.
Father Walt Jenny is with us on God Calling. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a message. You're listening to AM 1260 The Rock. Father Walt Jenny is joining us on God Calling. You're listening to AM 1260 The Rock. And Father, we talked about Catholic Charities and your own call to the priesthood. But many, many years served at one of the largest parishes in the diocese, St. Basil. Tell me about that. And it's a wonderful, beautiful church with the retirement facility next door. And it's just, wow.
The most amazing Holy Spirit fact about St. Basil to me, Paul, is that the church was built 56, 57 years ago. And the Catholic population of Brecksville at that time was probably somewhere between 5 and 10%. So if I was building a church at that time, I would have built a church for 300-400 people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, however they figured it out, they built a church that would accommodate 1,000 people, you know, and it must have been empty or pretty empty in the earlier days. We did lots of planning in Catholic Charities, and I don't think we ever planned that well as whoever those original founders of that parish were to build a church that big to accommodate the future needs, and because it really has grown, and the community today is probably a much higher percentage of Catholic, and I don't know what that percent would be, but it's fairly significant. When I left Catholic Charities in 94, I was living at St. Lawrence at East 80th and Union because it was pretty close to downtown, mm-hmm. and again, I wanted to live in a parish. So I did, and at some point, the Bishop Hill at the time, asked me if I could be the administrator of St. Catherine's at 93rd and Union. So I said, yeah, I'd like to, because it was kind of my way out after 20 years. I'd been scheming for that for a long time. How do I move on from this? And I don't think, honestly, I don't say this to be overly humble. I don't know that I was so good, but I was certainly safe because I wasn't going to lie and I wasn't going to cheat. I'll just do if you got me, you got me, and I would acknowledge that. So when St. Basil's, the person who kind of got me hooked on Catholic Charities, Father Ed Camille, became the pastor of St. Basil's, and then I became the director of Catholic Charities at that time. That would have been, you know, in the 90s. No, way before that, in the 80s, the early 80s. And Bishop Pilla, you might remember, had written a pastoral letter on the church in the city.
Church, oh, yeah.
And I thought maybe, you know, I already was at St. Catherine's, maybe applying for, and I had to apply for it, and get through all the interviews and everything with both parishes. Maybe these two parishes could work together and be of support of each other. And I just kind of saw it as a bridge between city and the suburbs and bring people together. Because I think once people get to know each other as people, you get by all the other issues that are out there between people. So I interviewed, and the people at St. Basil's agreed to it. People at St. Catherine's agreed to it. And we just had a wonderful partnership between the two parishes with lots of involvement going both ways. Everything from liturgy with St. Catherine's choir coming to St. Basil's and St. Basil's choir going there and combined choirs and picnics and parties and support. And many, many people from St. Basil's volunteered to work at bingo back in the day when there was smoking in these bingo halls.
Oh, boy.
It's like your worst nightmare.
Yeah, we were the altar boys. We used to sell snacks and drinks, and you go home, you have to shower.
throw your clothes away. Yeah, I mean, it was just a room full of smoke is all it was. And you didn't think anything of it. Yeah,
no.
Well, you did, but, you know, it's the way it was. So anyhow, that worked out very well together for a number of years. And then over time, before Bishop Lennon came to Cleveland to kind of bring parishes together and to unite them, which involved closing some parishes, the people from St. Catherine's, St. Timothy's, and St. Henry's amongst themselves said, you know, we need to combine these parishes together to create one strong, vibrant Catholic African-American community. And that took a couple years, but it wasn't. Bishop Lennon participated, but he didn't force anything. He just let them find their own way, and they did. And eventually then they agreed to come together and to close the other parishes and to open the new parish, which is called Holy Spirit, on 131st Street. I think it's in Cleveland still. Might be in Garfield Heights. That's worked out very, very well. Unfortunately, it ended the partnership, but it certainly was for the better.
You've kind of expanded that idea, I think, now into Honduras.
Yeah, we in 1999, priest, you know, the annual mission appeal that takes place in parishes, we had a priest from Honduras join us and tell the story of Honduras after Hurricane Mitch. Hurricane Mitch was like in 99, and basically it wiped out the whole country. I mean, it took out bridges, it took out villages, it took out everything. So he said, you know, you guys ought to come down, the priest said, and sin. He was from Jamaica, a Franciscan. He said, we really need help. So we started going down then, and we continued there for, you know, until the time that I retired. And they're still doing activities at the parish at St. Basil's to benefit the people in Honduras. So we were in an area called Olancho. They call them departments. We would call them states. It's the largest department in the country, the largest state, and it's mostly rural, mostly poor people. They literally live off the earth. If they have a good season, a good rainy season, a good sunny season, they have food. If they don't, they've got a problem. So, it's the way it is. But the people are wonderful. The kids are particularly wonderful. We started doing lots of different things, building some chapels and villages where the people could have a place to gather and to do religious education. People from Basel's worked with the people from Honduras. We must have built 15 little chapels that probably hold 50 to 100 people, which was a real labor of love. You mix the cement on the ground.
Wow.
And then, yeah, you do everything. You make the blocks, you do everything. So we did that. Then we saw, we started taking down doctors and nurses and some medical teams just to go into the villages and to kind of provide for people whatever was needed. And one thing we learned right away was that the water that the people had was really terribly contaminated. And so for children drinking that water, they would come up with every kind of E. coli. Oh. Because we tested the water, and you would see all the bacteria that was in there. And a couple of engineers from the parish and actually from Brecksville got together and put together some water filtration systems. We gradually introduced them to the villages. When I retired, I think right now there's 56 water purification systems in various villages. So the water, where does it come from? Most of it comes from the mountains, okay? There must be springs in the mountains from when they were forested. Now, none of the mountains where we are forested. It's all scrub. It's all been cut down. All the pine was cut down, you know, because that's the only way they have to make some money. But nonetheless, they have water. It comes down the mountain on the open ground, goes into a container, kind of like you see in communities around here, except it's on the ground. Then the water is piped down to various villages and to various homes. The trouble is it's already traveled over water, over ground. It's contaminated. And then if they don't have that, what they do is they bring the water from the river. And honestly, you'll see the cows in the river, the pigs in the river, washing trucks in the river. No exaggeration. That's exactly what they were drinking, the water from the river, you know. So that's what the impetus was, just seeing the health of the people when we visited with our medical groups, seeing how sick they were. You know, it led us to do this. So it's a pretty involved system, each water system, and all of them were donated by people or by companies from St. Basil's. They're about $3,500 each. They really do provide safe water to people.
We could go on for another half hour, but our time is up. Father, thank you so much. I really appreciate
your
coming. It's very nice of you to share your story. And if that's not a story of accomplishing and helping people, is what you set out to do, I don't think anything is. So thank you.
You're listening, Paul, to
God Calling on AM 1260, The Rock.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do?
Hello? Hello?
Who is this?
This is God Calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. Join us next week for another episode, and if you missed any part of this week's program, visit our website at am1260therock.com and click on the Archive Audio tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.